So I wanted to, while you're here, chat to you about a couple of concepts in Tai Chi and get your thoughts on it. Maybe I should move, put that there. Yeah, put that there.
Cool.
A couple of concepts on Tai Chi, and there's one in particular. It's hard for me to describe. Maybe you can describe it better because you'll know what I'm talking about. When you see videos of teacher and student, okay, and the teacher is teaching the student, and the student tries to do fujin on the teacher, and it doesn't work. And then the teacher goes and adjusts their posture, and then all of a sudden, the fujin works and the teacher falls over. Have you seen those kind of videos?
Lots of those.
You know the ones I mean, right? Okay. So what they're essentially demonstrating is that you can make an external adjustment to the structure to produce fujin.
Yes.
Essentially.
Which by definition is external.
I thought I'd get your views on it.
Well, I mean, that's obvious, isn't it? If you just change the shape and then there's jin, well, it's not jin. At least it's not internal jin.
Sure.
But firstly, I mean, if the student can fajin the teacher, I mean, there's something wrong, really. So obviously the teacher's letting it happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, because I could prime myself so that a student could...
Yeah, you can make it happen.
Through me, right?
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, like if they can actually produce internal jin... And maybe you adjust their shoulder or their shape a little bit, and then their jin, which they've actually produced, is sharper or cleaner or bigger or something like that. But if you can't produce jin and you move your elbow or something, and then all of a sudden you can produce jin, you're not producing jin. It's a scam. It's a trick. It's a party trick.
Yeah. And I've been on a few workshops over the years, especially when I was a bit younger, and some where it felt a little bit like that. I'd go on push hands workshops, and sometimes you go in the push hands workshop beyond the drills, which I used to quite like those. You're learning all the.
When you mean you learn the drills, you mean?
Yeah, you learn the drills. Yeah, I learn the drills. They're nice and useful, but then sometimes
drills
I would go
build
and
the skills.
It would just be a teacher, you know, stand here, do this, and then work in sort of preset fudging within very set condition things.
Yeah. Like very basic step, like not necessary, most basic step, but. I mean, it's a total misunderstanding, isn't it? I mean, it's not internal jin if you have to put your elbows like this or this. Like, it's completely irrelevant.
Sure. Yeah.
Mobilize the chi, not just pull your elbow in.
Yes. And that's that this idea that definitely I've seen spread. It is partly from your writings as well. I can see it's gone through the Tai Chi world, including through the people who are not too keen on you as a person, but through them, which is... this idea of Tai Chi being based on innate qualities, maybe I'm misquoting you, but innate qualities rather than external techniques.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So then that sort of brings you, it's something I was thinking about with sort of push hands. When you're in Tui Chi, I always think that what it means is you can create the outcome of the fa or the bounce, but you can do it either through conditions in the student or conditions in the teacher. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes a mix of the two.
Well, the outcome differs dependent on the relationship between those two sets of conditions, right?
Okay.
That's why, you know, people say, oh, that person fell over, that person bounced back. It's not real if not everyone bounces, dung, 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 three times.
Yeah.
But there's a different set of conditions and interactions. So the same power might make one person splat on the ground, one person crumble, one person bounce, one person cartwheel. You do nothing different.
Yes.
But that's how cause and condition works.
Totally, yeah. And what I'm getting at with the conditions in the student versus the teacher is I think that sometimes what happens in the drills is you will go and they try to set up a certain set of conditions within the receiver rather than the issuer. Do you get what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's a terrible thing I see all the time.
Yeah.
You see all the videos of, okay, touch me here. No, here and there, okay. And then you see the teacher just push their hip back a little bit. Make sure their elbows are lined up, they line up the student perfectly, and bang, I can fire you.
Sure.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
Where you make the receiver be in the perfect condition to bounce. You see it all over videos of Chinese masters too, all the time.
Yes.
When they can't free play, can't move, so it's always a set pattern or a set shape or everything is perfect set of conditions which are ideal.
Or even very preset when the student walks up to you, isn't it? Like when I'm teaching a workshop or something, and all right, you know, I don't expect them to try to headbutt me or something, but at the same time, I just tell them put their arms like touch,
go.
But it's not like, come in and can you put some weight on my right
elbow?
And
I always just say, come,
yes,
come,
yeah,
not yeah, yeah. do this, do that.
Yes, I taught a workshop in America number of years ago, and I've only done one Tai Chi workshop in America. People kept asking. I did a push hand thing for about 50 people. And there was a bunch of guys there from one of the famous teachers in America, mm-hmm. who I've not met. I don't know this teacher, but obviously I know of him. Everybody in the Tai Chi world would know of him, who has very, very powerful fujin and very impressive videos.
Right.
And I, like I say, I never met him. And his students were there. One of these students came up at the beginning and said, can I feel the difference in the jin? And my first thing was, oh, God, pressure. This guy trains with something good, so fuck it up. So I touched his arms, and he basically did a backflip. Yeah. It was like, bang, 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 down the floor. I hadn't done anything at all. Mm-hmm. I'd literally just put my hands on his hands, and he went. And so what happened was I said, can you stand there? Take any old posture. And I just sort of felt around his body and realized how primed he was.
Oh, totally.
Like his whole body was like a giant spring. And then I found all of the students of that teacher who were on that workshop, about four or five, were all the same.
Well, I know the teacher you're talking about, because we've discussed this. And I've also met people, disciples from other famous teachers in the US, nothing against the US, it happens all over the world, who have come to see me. And you don't even do anything and they fly. It looks exactly like their teacher's videos.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, wait, I haven't even released the power yet. Yeah, it's a priming. I mean, I will say one thing, even if any student that's been training with me for a long time, even a while, even if they're not great, they're damn hard to move. Yeah, Minimum is they're damn hard to move.
I've met a couple.
There's no way they're going to like bounce for you.
Yeah, sure.
It's just the opposite of that.
Sure.
But I've seen this so much with famous teachers. They're incredibly sensitive to even something that's not there. You haven't even released a jin yet.
Yeah, because I know whether I'm releasing the gin or not. And then that sort of brought me around to that conclusion. It makes me realize that if these kind of skills are produced from a set of conditions between issuer and receiver, it's much easier. It's like much easier to train the receiver than it is to train the issuer. You know what I mean? Like, you can train the receiver in what, an afternoon? You can train the issuer in 10 years?
Yeah, well, you know, like. It's easy to make a golf ball. It's elastic. You hit it and it flies 100 meters, but it's hard to master golf.
Totally, yeah. Yeah. And it made me realize that's, I think, what a lot of what is going on is maybe the sheer timescale involved in actually getting your body to produce these internal outcomes is just not what people are after. They just want the outcome and they don't mind if it's a real skill inside themselves.
Well, I think that's a problem in the internal arts world, period, not just Tai Chi. Same in the Neigong world, right? People want a specific skill. They only care about that skill. They don't care how they get it, whether it has anything to do with cultivation or not. They just want the power.
Right.
And the same in Tai Chi. They just want to make that result. It doesn't have to be the real thing. Mm. So you see in Tai Chi, a lot of the mechanical line up your bones, shunt off the ground, or line up your bones and balls and levers mechanics, or make your student, like you say, primed. Oh, look, I get the effect. I win. But there's nothing cultivated. It's an empty achievement, right?
Makes you feel good, then.
It makes them feel good, apparently. It made me feel rotten and empty.
There's that thing as well, isn't there? That there's two ways for something to. There's probably more than two ways, but often two ways for something to arise, which is you can cultivate a particular conditional quality inside yourself, and then the byproduct is a mechanic arises. Right.
Yeah, the actual cultivation.
Totally. Or once you know the mechanic, you can almost kind of reverse engineer and fabricate a version of it. Yeah, that's not based upon that.
The counterfeit version, exactly. Looks the same, feels similar for a non-initiate, it seems the same.
Yes.
But it's worthless. Uh-huh. It's the counterfeit version. Yep, it's everywhere.
Neigong is, and Qigong is very much rife with that as well.
Right, absolutely.
Lots.
Same problem. Lots. Yeah. But for the counterfeit to exist, so must the real.
Yes.
So, you know, people. Obviously, they come across the counterfeit because it's 100 times more common.
Yes.
And then they say, oh, it's counterfeit, it's bullshit, it's fake, it doesn't work. Well, yes, that's true.
So what?
But there is the real.
So
because people chase an effect,
mm-hmm.
they're satisfied with the counterfeit version, and then they don't even realize really they're doing the counterfeit version. But if you're truly driven by a deep yearning of your being for cultivation, then you don't care about the effect so much as the cultivation itself.
Yeah,
that's not many people. Yeah. Most people just want the effect, right?
That's how Tai Chi or something like that evolves into a very meditative practice after a while.
Well, what it should be, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile just to get an effect. Who cares?
Yeah.
Counterfeit would do if all you want is the effect, right?
Yes.
Who cares?
And the vested interest in having the skill is an interesting one as well, because if I look at my own path of Tai Chi, even though, as you know, Qigong is more interesting to me, I've been in Tai Chi for a long time, I had Fa Jin very early on in my Tai Chi, young. Yeah. But it wasn't like, then I would encounter a better way of doing it, and then I had to restart, and then restart. Right. And I'm sure I've restarted Tai Chi about 20 times.
Over the years. Totally different, so many times, countless times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've done the same for all the different versions of cultivation I do, not just Tai Chi. That's the way it goes.
Yes. You meet someone who can do something to a higher level, and you're like,
You instantly dump everything you did and
absolutely change. Yeah. And yet I've met a lot of people who have a vested interest already in protecting the outcome they've already had.
That's most people.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah.
Seems that way.
The ones that, I observed when I started getting into Tai Chi.
Yeah.
And I saw people that had a certain skill, teachers. Yeah. And decades later now, they're the same.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing. And I don't know how, because especially now with the internet and all the people and everything, like, you can upgrade your knowledge. I mean, there's no reason.
You can at least see what everyone else is doing.
There's no reason to do exactly the same. I don't even know how it's possible. Even if you didn't learn from anyone else, you would evolve, but they don't. They have a piece of pie that they think that works, and they're just obsessed with it. It's a fear thing. I don't know. I don't get it, because I'm immediately bored with anything I can do.
Yeah, yeah. Once you can do something once, who cares?
As soon as you can do it consistently, let's say, it's over, right? Like, you want the new thing.
Totally. Human nature. Yes, completely, yeah. And I had one lady who came. I remember one lady who came who ran a fairly big school, actually, in the UK. And she came and she did a workshop. And it was only on mechanics or something. I remember talking to her at the end and her saying, no, I think I've wasted lots of years in the system she did before.
Oh, that's what you hear so often, right?
Yeah, and I said, well, it doesn't matter. I said, don't worry about it. Obviously, you run a school. I said, I'll give you a hand. I said, find some time.
Mm-hmm.
Come see me. I'll give you a hand to adjust the mechanics. There's no strings involved. I'm not going to try and take ownership of what you do. We can adjust what you do and go back and run your school. And she was really thankful. Never saw her again.
All right. I could repeat the same stories happened to me so many times.
A month later, saw her hosting from China, her teacher, a workshop in... So basically she came, realized what she was doing was shite, went back and I'm going to stick with it anyway. Certainly, because she'd already invested so many years.
It's like people sticking with a bad marriage and that kind of thing.
Yes.
It happens.
I don't understand it. Life is, there's plenty of years. Like, there's always time to relearn something.
Okay, but here's something.
Yeah.
We approach these arts because we're interested in cultivation.
Yeah. Which is why everybody does.
No, they don't.
Right.
They want the outcome.
Sure.
Right. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. You want an outcome. You want to be famous. You want money. You want a school. You want to be able to bounce people. You want to be able to electrocute people, whatever.
Right? Yes.
You want an outcome.
Yeah.
Cultivation is you want you, your body, chi, mind, spirit, being to... You want to align it, become more divine, whatever.
Right? Sure.
So if you're interested in cultivation, there's nothing that was a waste.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you're not throwing it away.
Yeah.
Because you, at the bare minimum, you cultivated patience and endurance, right? Bare minimum. Now, there is a much more useful time and not so useful use of your time, but it's not all throwaway. But if it's just an outcome and you stop doing the thing that makes that outcome, you're back to zero. Because it's not about you transforming.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
So they're a radically different thing. You can never throw away what you've put in because it's you.
Yeah.
Like someone that's done external athletics, they're coordinated, disciplined, strong, flexible. They can't, maybe. They're not. Let's say you start something internal and radically different. They still are those things.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's them. They cultivated that in them. They can't throw that away.
I just pulled a face when you said external athletics, because obviously from our discussion my view of where Chinese arts came from.
Chinese martial arts? Yes.
So if you're not familiar with this, I may as well go into
it. I don't know if it's your view or if it's a fact, I would say. It's pretty factual.
It is a fact. It's a fact, as far as I understand, that maybe some scholars in that area would agree with, and historians, and practitioners don't.
Well, they don't want to.
For obvious reasons. Yeah. But if Philly went on this, basically. Japan went through it actually first before China within their arts, and also yoga in India went through it as well. But I'm less familiar with yoga's history. Do you know any more about that than I do on?
I mean, yeah, I could talk about it, but not enough that I couldn't be fact checked on.
Sure,
it,
yeah, so yeah. So the Chinese arts, I should stick with Japanese arts, I understand too. Basically, what happened in the early 1900s, it was around 1910, 1920, stuff like that. China, like Japan, started to look towards Western exercise in an attempt to create a kind of calisthenics, I suppose would be the word, wasn't it, to improve the health of the nation.
Right.
And if you think about what was going on in the era, early 1900s, they'd had all kinds of issues and problems, and health of the general
sick
people
man
was
of
not
Asia
very high.
All that.
Totally, yeah. Was that what the Japanese called the Chinese? That was the name for them, wasn't it? Sick man of the East or something, yeah. So basically, they were looking for another exercise form, and all they had was various forms of warring kung fu that had existed in China between families. So all of the stuff you see in the kung fu films where the families hated each other and they kept Hua family versus Yang family versus whatever, I don't know, made up Chinese names. But they weren't really interested in it, and they were looking for a form of exercise that was for the health of the nation. It was around that era that they started to say, we need to make Kung Fu a national exercise that is good for the health of the nation, which is a great idea. So the way they did it was they looked to German and Swedish calisthenic aerobic exercises. Right. And what the Germans and the Swedish had was a set of exercises that were linked to the military at the time, that was basically gongbu, mabu, many of the straight line drills, swing kicks.
Well, I mean, you can see it, right? You can see it.
Yeah, in the old photos. So they had a form of physical exercise that was based on stretching and preset exercise. Basically, it looks like kung fu, modern kung fu. So the
arms out, swing kicks, back legs straight, fencing stance, straight lines.
Even the
the
swings.
The gymnastic swirls.
Yep. And they incorporated it into the kung fu styles to create their own form of national exercise. It was a kind of precursor to contemporary wushu, because wushu came in sort of 50s, 60s, something like that, wasn't it? Cultural Revolution era. My history is not good. But they were already kind of moving in that direction. So any system you see, basically, with a straight line gongbu, or a mabu where the thighs are parallel with the ground, even, as opposed to arch.
Rounded,
as opposed to rounded.
When their arts are not rounded, they're not Chinese.
Yeah.
They are German.
They are German and Swedish. Yeah, completely.
Straight.
Yeah. And Shaolin Temple absorbed it all.
Sure.
So anything from Shaolin Temple that you see now, any Shaolin style, actually comes from Germany and Sweden.
That's amazing.
And so does anything from Wudang Mountain.
Yeah.
Because that incorporated all of the... So even their...
Which is much, much newer.
Much newer, yeah. 1980s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Wudang Mountain style is basically the same calisthenics that they absorbed and put into the martial arts. Karate, the sort of Japanese took that when they created the stances from the Okinawan.
Well, the old karate rounded, and then after that, the really square, straight karate.
Yes.
Chest out like a Westerner.
Yep.
Right? Big upper carriage sort of look. Straight arm, straight back leg.
Yes.
Yeah, like a European.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, so that... Why this came up, because he mentioned external aerobics.
Yeah.
But joking aside, it means that actually most Chinese martial arts are
external aerobics. Yeah. I mean, well, if all you do is move around aerobically and you don't do inner cultivation and you don't fight, then by definition, it is only external aerobics.
I think that's true.
It doesn't matter what kind of robes you wear.
Yes. Orange, blue, whatever. Yeah and I think... Something that's often missed is people don't look at the kind of the ethos of nations at different points in history, do they? And there was definitely a time in Asia when they were looking to the West.
Oh, massively.
I think especially because they probably encountered Western colonialists, I guess, who are big and muscular and stuff like this.
Almost any lineage or story you read about the old Kung Fu master who's so famous because he beat the Western boxer.
Right,
Western boxer, some guy off the ship, like nobody that's got a name, just a big white guy.
Wasn't Tyson.
No.
Yeah.
So I mean, obviously they were impressive to them.
Yeah.
Big,
yeah.
strong, powerful, and you know, they're like, well, how do we develop that?
The size disparity. That's
huge.
Have been quite.
I mean, it's an undeniable reality: size and strength.
Yeah.
Not to take away from boxing, and boxing.
No.
Great combination.
Yeah, and from what I understand historically, they never really encountered a lot of hook punches either.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a shocker.
Where is this strange thing coming from the side?
Well, if you think about Asianers, they carry their weight to the center. I was just watching that program, The Shogun. Mm-hmm. Shogun obviously was just Japan, not China, but still same idea where you can see them all when they walk, they shuffle.
Yeah, the different walking.
Everything's in the hara, shoulders don't move. Mm-hmm. And then you see the Westerners walking like apes around. Yeah, you can see why they had straight punches as opposed to hook punches.
Yeah, totally.
So most of most styles that are linked, I would say, to the north.
Well, it didn't seem to happen in the south.
No, it didn't. No. It's northern styles.
The uncivilized barbarians in the south didn't get civilized by the Western influence, so they kept their arts.
Basically, yeah. So all of your white cranes and your Hungar, the southern mantis. Yeah.
Well, that's why they're all rounded legs and everything and no big bow and arrow stances and no straight anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see as well that to me that Tai Chi, even though Tai Chi's development is quite new, you can see that Tai Chi systems kind of don't have that within it, the straight.
Well, the proper ones don't, but many false ones do, right?
They do.
You see all kinds of straight back leg. I mean, it's a dead giveaway that they totally missed it.
Yes.
At the most basic level.
Yeah, completely.
But yeah, no, even slightly authentic Tai Chi has that. No chance.
No. But the straight leg and the low stance and the long Gong Bu and the structure of the straight line and everything has become very prevalent within Tai Chi as well now.
Yeah, I mean, it's laughable, but yes. They totally missed it. Well, they're doing okay, but their Swedish gymnastics are not bad.
Totally, yeah. I mean, there's a benefit to it. I mean, they incorporated those exercises in because there was a benefit to it. They wanted to increase people's
Well, it health. Makes you more physically athletic and
yeah,
I mean, there's sure.
I've trained in wushu schools. I have to say,
it's not easy stuff.
It was hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a few lessons where I was vomiting at the side of the class.
I would be first lesson.
Swing kicks and jumping and spinning and landing. But I remember doing it, thinking, yeah, this just feels like I'm doing gymnastics. Like
it feels because
like
it is,
and it feels like I'm doing gymnastics 20 years too late.
Yeah,
as well. Do you know what I mean?
Like most you're meant to be 12.
Russians and stuff. Yeah, kids. Yeah, yeah. Totally. When you see on TV, and I was doing all this and bouncing around and doing it, and I was thinking, yeah, great for fitness, but it's not. There's nothing in it related to Chinese arts or cultivation, even slightly. And then I remember exploring around in China. I went to places like Wudang Mountain and Shaolin. I went to both of those, and I did some park Tai Chi, you know, like, I mean, in the park, not park, not a name. And realizing how many of those exercises from the Wushu camps have been incorporated into all of the all of the systems,
Osmosis.
So it makes you wonder, like, how many internal principles can you develop if you have the German-Swedish athletic structure? That's the question. What do you think? Could you combine the two?
I guess it's possible. If you were already achieved internally, you could do it in that structure, but why would you?
Yeah.
If you hadn't already achieved internally and you were trying to do it through that structure, it would be very, very difficult.
It'd be very hard, yeah.
It's just not suitable for filling.
Even to sink is very difficult.
Well, it doesn't sink.
No, because your structure is pushing up from inside, right, from the ground.
It's the opposite of the causal conditions.
Yes.
But if you're already there, you could mimic those shapes and do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no way, I think. Or maybe a very minute, some gifted individual, maybe. Unlikely.
You have to have very open joints.
Supernaturally so.
Yeah.
And not just the joints. The whole insides and everything of your body would have to be unique.
Yeah. The other issue with it as well is when I've tried to teach people that have that kind of structure, even if you can get it out of their body, which is quite hard. It's a hard structure to get out of someone's body. Mm. It's like if you ever tried to teach Tai Chi to someone who's done a lot of warrior stance in yoga.
Yeah, it's very tough, yeah.
It's hard, yeah? Yeah. It's hard to get them to rearrange their hips and everything.
The warrior stance is the perfect example of the same thing happening in yoga.
Yes.
The fencing lunge.
And the thing I find that is really troublesome for people is I think it messes with the shape of the cavities.
Yeah,
and it does. I don't mean Uranus or anything, but...
No, it does.
Yeah. How do you think?
Well, it makes them go the wrong way. The outer shell of the cavity is in the wrong flexation and goes the wrong way, and then therefore the inner cavity gets distorted and then you can't fill.
Yeah, and the cavity shaping to fill It's such a specific thing, isn't it? Like the way you have to organize the body in order to get the cavity to...
It has to be how it has to be.
Yes.
I don't think there's even that much variety in the way it can be.
Mm.
I mean, certainly when we've discussed these things, we only see that we're doing at least that level of thing. It's the same. There's only one way it can be to fill.
Yes.
And those shapes create the opposite. The opposite. The opposite in the yao, the opposite in the chest, the opposite in the shoulders, the opposite in the kwa.
Yeah,
it's the opposite.
Yes.
So instead of creating space for filling, it's pressing up against where there should be space, which is emptying, essentially.
Yeah. We'll create a good physique.
Yeah, well, it's up more more jacked.
Up and out. Jacked. The opposite of the body Tai Chi tends to give you.
Yeah.
It will open you up, for sure. Yeah. But not great.
No.
Not so great.
Well, it's just got nothing to do with Tai Chi or even Chinese arts, really.
And here are some principles in Tai Chi. See if you agree or disagree. I know you disagree with some of these, but obviously a lot of the time when people talk about Tai Chi, they talk about center line being very important. How do you feel about that one?
I don't talk about that.
Alignment of the spine, so it's particularly straight.
Well, it has to be stretched.
Stretched, right. Turning around... Like an axis turning your hips?
No, I'm not into that either.
Okay, so all of those things basically are things that are produced from aligning to me an external shape.
Right.
Using an external gombu or something like this. So I thought maybe this is really what I was aiming for on this chat, was maybe we could take those three principles and kind of look at them.
Okay.
Because I think that there's been a fair bit of discussion of sink of the chi.
Mm-hmm.
A fair bit, which actually I didn't know till recently wasn't standard in Tai Chi. I thought everybody talked about the sink of the chi, but it seems not.
They don't, and...
I didn't know that.
No, they don't. And so this is a saying that one of my teachers would say often, which he got from his teacher. No sinking the chi, no bullet in the gun.
Okay, yep.
So your shape might be perfect. Everything looks just like your teacher. Your movement's great. But you haven't sunk the chi, nothing happens when you do those shapes.
Yeah, sure.
Then you sink the chi and you do exactly the same thing, bang, you get the result.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that traditionally maybe not like inside family traditionally, but traditionally outside teaching would be everything except the bullet.
Right, okay.
And then if you finally prove your character and everything on the end or like, you know, the master's ready to retire or whatever, okay. Here's the magazine. Here's the actual ammunition. You've built everything else. Bang. And I've met people that trained and were quite good and they had all the great shapes or everything. And I've taught them just very short time, a few tricks about sinking the chi, a few things to get that, and bang, they got the skill.
Right. Okay.
They'd already built the whole gun.
Yeah.
They just had no ammunition. So yeah, I don't think it's standard. In my school and your school, it's sort of the first thing not the day one thing you teach, but the first thing you're trying to work towards, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And because, I mean, that's just our attitude about teaching, but I'm pretty sure that's not the Chinese way.
No, I've discovered that in recent times. I guess my first teacher of Tai Chi wasn't hugely involved in sinking the chi.
Right.
Or one of my first, I should say. But he had so many weird esoteric chi skills. He could break the rules. Some people are able to just break all those rules, right?
I mean, it's just, you have to fill with chi one way or another.
Yeah, he had other methods. Yeah. But every other teacher I've ever met, sinking the chi has been kind of a main component of it,
right,
with their view being that it doesn't coagulate enough to start to open up and affect the insides of the body, basically.
Yeah, it's an amount thing.
Yes.
It's very much an amount thing.
Yes.
You need more.
But yeah, it's not the norm. But the other thing as well with sinking the chi is you saying you could get it to people to do it quite quick. I can't.
Well, they'd already done decades of making everything right. The body shape, the cavities were open. It was all right there.
Right, okay.
And then, within months of,
Months, okay, months.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can teach them
we're
for...
We're not talking an hour.
No, the instruction's an hour.
Yeah, sure.
And then they work for a few months and bang, they've got it.
Right, okay, sure, yeah.
So, I mean, that's quick.
Yeah, that's fast. Yeah, that's what I was wondering what your time scale is when you say fast. Yeah, are we talking like an afternoon?
No.
Right, okay.
Yeah, not possible. Because it's an accumulation. If you can just do it, then that's a trick, right? It's like the elbow thing.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Or like dropping your weight or something else.
Yeah. It's why I always avoided, I know you do lots of Tai Chi teaching. And I've always avoided doing a lot of Tai Chi teaching because I never really figured out how to do a lot of seminars. Like, I could teach Tai Chi in a full-time school like I do here in Bali.
Because of the sequence of learning.
Totally. But I never really figured, if I had 4 days with people...
What do you teach them?
Exactly. What do you do? Like,
well, I teach them Neigong. Tai Chi Neigong. Right? I don't teach them forms. I teach them Neigong.
Yes.
I teach them standing, body opening, Chi mobilization. It would look more like a Neigong class than a Tai Chi class.
Yeah.
There's almost nothing in that looks even like Peng Lu Jian or anything. It's all in a neutral stance doing Neigong. None of it looks like Tai Chi. It looks like a Neigong class. Yeah. It is a Neigong class.
It makes sense to me. Yeah. I mean, I never even understood, if you're doing a seminar, to be honest, why someone would do a lot of things with applications, or because if you're coming and you're doing 2 days and then you never see the person again, what's the point? It's not like a martial art. Has to be so drilled into people over a really long period of time for them to even get something like that. It'd be like going on a, you know, never done boxing, and then you do a 2-day boxing seminar, then you never do boxing again. What have you learned?
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I mean, I agree. But I mean, it depends if the seminars are like passerbyers or it's your regulars coming.
Yes.
There are different sort of seminar cultures out there, I guess.
But it's different if you're giving them exercises that they can actually...
Oh, if you give them, like, you know, I give them an exercise for transforming a part of the body, exactly, and whether you are part of the system or not, you will get that transformation if you do the training.
Yes.
And that, because it's cultivation, will change you, right? Not just what you do, so it will affect everything you do.
Okay, yeah.
Which I think that's the essential training, to change you.
Yeah.
That's the key point, not just to learn the thing.
How do people receive that? I'm curious. Like, do you ever get people moan they didn't learn form or something?
Because
I would imagine that's what some people want to learn.
Which
I would never teach on a course.
Smart people.
A form.
Smart people or people that have been around for decades that know the scene, that understand training, they love it.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Beginners don't like it. Sure. And people that want the counterfeit bills don't like it.
Right, okay.
They want some trick that they can feel like, oh, now I can fire Jin. No, you didn't tell... You didn't teach me the trick. They often say to me, when are you going to teach me to fire Jin? They say that to me. And it's like, wow. Every single thing I'm doing is teaching you how to change you. So you move your fingers, it's fire Jin. You don't do fire Jin. You are Tai Chi.
Yeah, sure.
And so my training's based on that. Try to change the being, not do something that you can learn, you know, pay $100 and learn something and then go, it's crazy.
Yeah, same. Crazy.
It's
same.
The opposite of cultivation.
I get people come on Qigong courses with me, and which I teach a lot, and moan because they don't learn a full set of, do you know what I mean? Like
an entire set
of exercises or something, because that's not how I do. I would choose 2 or 3 within a set to use as tools.
That's how I do it too. You get two or three exercises and you drill it hard.
Yep.
Hard.
Yes.
And it's tough, and you actually get some transformation even over a weekend, and then if you could take it away, like, you will really get real gains.
Yeah,
it's not like, here's a big set. No, that takes time.
Yeah,
and
it's been a thing to try to convince people as well. And actually, people are getting it. I think the mindset in the internal arts is shifting.
Well, I should hope so. I mean, most likely you as well, and maybe a few others, have been yelling for a decade or more.
I've been whispering.
So maybe something is going in.
Yeah, maybe it's starting to sink in, because I think more people are getting it, like something I have to get people to understand when they come is I'm really sorry, guys, but you can't make a single Qigong exercise work.
No, because you don't have the body.
Totally, yeah. So it's not going to do anything. So if you do this, it's not going to do your lungs, or this isn't going to do your liver, or something like that.
Nothing will happen.
Nothing will happen. Nothing will work.
You need to open the body. You need to fill up with Qi. You need to build the connections. Same for Tai Chi. If you don't have those things, nothing works.
These days, it's not even a hard sell. Because when people come and you explain it to them, most people go, yeah, that makes sense. And then they do it. And then they understand, and then the kind of, you know, and obviously I'm talking about Qigong rather than Tai Chi, but I imagine it'd be very similar, is that after a while they've done all this training, and then you get them to do one movement, and then all of a sudden all of these things go on, and it's like,
you built the animal.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think that's how all internal arts work. If they don't, I think it's just technique land, it's a waste of time, it's nothing.
Well, I thought that's what, isn't that what the old stories are? You went to see the master, he made you stand for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, there are people saying that there's no standing, right? There are special people out there.
that don't need to stand. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that comes from, really. Because every account I ever read was that you had to stand.
Of course you do.
But you have to stand in a particular way. Maybe that's what they're missing. Like
you just stand there. Mm. Wait, yes, as long my as shoulders are burning.
I'm not surprised. My mind is bored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, standing is a very active thing as well, isn't it? There's many things you're doing inside. It's not like it's a really static process because your mind is trying to...
I hate it when people call it standing meditation because it's got nothing to do with meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite of meditation, actually.
Explain the difference.
Well, meditation is not active.
Yeah.
It's nei gong. Standing is nei gong. You're doing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You're doing something with the qi. Or at least you're doing something in the beginning with the body and the cavities and stuff to get some qi or whatever in the beginning. Yes. Meditation is the opposite of that. Meditation is more about observing, watching, you know, absorbing. And it's not activity. It's cessation of activity.
Yeah, sure.
Stillness and activity are opposites, right?
Yeah, in the Taoist path, they refer to it as being the, you know, they draw it with those four key symbols.
Exactly that. They're perfect.
Stillness on the outside and movement on the inside, right? Yeah.
But or meditation being stillness and stillness.
Yes, completely, yeah.
The opposite of, well, nei gong, well, this kind of nei gong, like standing, would be stillness on the outside and movement on the inside. But even if you get both moving, I mean, it's still like the nei gong process working, and then you move like the form if you do it properly, right?
Yes.
Standing still and still, or which is meditation, which is no different from sitting, except you happen to be standing, has nothing to do with the standing in Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yes.
That's what they do in Buddhism and stuff like that, like the four postures, and it's great. It's just got nothing to do with it. It's a different thing. It's just meditation.
Yes. Yeah, I remember the first standing classes I did. I was young, so my body didn't hurt that much, you know, and also done a lot of martial arts training. So I remember everyone around me being physical.
Hip, strong legs.
And it was like, it's all right. Like physically, I was okay, but everyone around me was suffering a lot. But I was younger. Nowadays, I would probably be suffering the same if I...
Luckily, you don't have to do it like that now.
No. Totally, yeah, but...
that
but
stage is done.
Also had like self-destructiveness and gusto could just kind of
wheel
push
and fire.
But I do remember having a fucking headache from the amount of principles I had to apply.
Just trying to do it all.
I just remember the pressure, just like, right, shoulder this, release that, well, that's quad, so it's quite important. Like, and you get to the end of the checklist and then the start of the checklist has gone wrong.
I mean, that's what that's what the students always say. Well, it's like 1,000 things you have to do at once. That's the doing part, the inside part.
Yes.
Don't just stand and wait. I mean, because the instruction's not out there for a lot of people, and so they learn, probably with a straight back leg, to do the form 10 times a day, and then when they try standing and they stand and wait, and nothing happens. So in their experience, standing is useless.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So from their point of view, what they're saying is right.
Yep.
But they're not doing internal arts, so you know.
Yeah, completely. They're doing Swedish, German gymnastics. Yeah, completely. Because the standing should... give birth to everything else, right? Like the movement flows out of that standing posture.
Well, if the movement has to come from mobilizing the qi, well, you need to get the qi. And how do you do that? Standing, right? And all the things that you do to make standing work.
Yes.
But there's no way you're going to get it not still. It's possible, but it's hard.
Yeah, I've seen people get rebounding level jin with movement.
Sure, but that's... it's important, rebounding. It's like a first step.
Yes.
And it's good. It's better than a lot of what's out there, but it's still not the real deal.
No. Maybe you could discuss the difference between the two. Because obviously there's rebounding and then there's, well, let's just call it non-rebounding. Are you okay to give a summation of that?
Yeah, rebounding is borrowing.
Because rebounding is where we both started. Right?
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think it's, and I still teach it for years to get people really good at it. It's borrowing the other person's force through the elastic nature of your body and then returning it.
Yes.
Right? So it's dependent probably on the ground. Maybe you can rebound somewhere else out of your body. You could.
Yeah.
You can rebound out of the waist.
Yep. Yep.
And it's through the elastic tissues. And it's dependent on the force of the opponent. So that's when you say, you see teachers, give me more force.
Yeah, that's always a key.
Asking for attention.
You have to have that force for rebounding. Yep. Yeah.
And you probably need quite a fixed kind of force.
Yeah.
Like if the person's giving you a really awkward elastic force that's not has no straight lines in it, it's not going to be so easy.
Yes.
And you also can't really throw a punch with it or whatever. you sort of can rebound on impact, but you can't generate properly.
Wouldn't be great, would it?
No, it's not ideal. And then what I would call Nei-Jin.
Yeah.
So I think that's still Jin. It's rebounding Jin.
Yeah.
And it will say Nei-Jin, real Jin. You need fullness of Qi, actual Peng. And then when you mobilize the Qi through the body, it affects the silk of the body, the membranes, the fascial network and everything, and creates actual power in you.
Yes.
Nothing to do with them. You're not borrowing.
Yeah.
They can be a limp. They can be relaxed. They can be awkward. They can be standing still. You are the power.
Yes.
You're not borrowing that power. So that's the difference in my
It's a massive difference as well.
Oh, they're radically different.
Because if you're going to use it as a martial art, say, to have to borrow the other person, there's a lot of martial arts talk about borrowing and returning the other person's force.
Heaps.
But I
always
think
soft darts.
But I always think it's a bit of a weakness because it's very limiting,
dependent.
Isn't it?
Sometimes it's a skill. It's part of the art. It's not the
art.
Sometimes
you want to attack.
Yes.
Sometimes you want to be able to deliver the power without the requirement.
It's far more practical.
Person. Yes.
And
certainly easier.
And the problem is, good people can apply force to you in such a way that it's very difficult to borrow.
Yeah. Even without subtlety, there was another teacher.
Just awkward strength, even like a really like a natural grappler type, that kind of body is harder to borrow than a nice straight line like how.
Or a very uncoordinated person.
Uncoordinated people too, because they're disconnected, right?
Uncoordinated people are the hardest people to work with, even if they.
If you just use your own power, it's okay. But if you're borrowing their power, it's very awkward.
It's very awkward, yeah.
Because it's not connected to their body.
Yeah. And it's just so random. It reminds me of when you're doing like a sparring type martial art. And then you spar with the seniors.
And you get used to someone that moves a natural, like a trained way.
And then you get a beginner.
Yeah.
It's like, how did the foot come from there? What the fuck? Like, it's totally. So random.
It's extremely unorthodox.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But this is kind of like we were talking about before, where you're making the Fajin just happen in the opponent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, I mean, borrowing is more geared towards that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So one of the things I've noticed with if people try to skip that phase, which in my opinion should be quite long, the rebounding phase. Because I've seen people that have, let's say, some technology for developing the Nei-Jin, and they do that, but they never develop the rebounding properly.
Okay.
They don't develop their legs properly.
All right,
they just
that.
Stand on their legs like they're stilts or like a platform and use their waist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
So the Jin doesn't run through the legs properly. They never open the legs because they're not rebounding up and down through the legs properly.
Yeah.
They're just using the waist and maybe even the spine or whatever.
And but the rebounding really helps you to find your feet consistently.
You find your feet, you become rooted. I don't like that term, but stable. And the legs, we use it mainly to open the legs in my system. And then those open legs stay with you because it's cultivation. When you start doing more sophisticated methods, your legs are always active, engaged, the chi from your legs is part of it. You're not just standing on your hips, resting on your hips, which I've seen a lot of. Yeah.
As you know, you've been here a couple of months and been here several times over the last couple of years. Teaching full-time martial arts training has been an experience for me. It's been a lot of hard work, and seeing the difficulties people have in the martial arts, finding the feet was massive.
It's huge.
For the students here in Tai Chi.
It's huge.
Took a while.
And the depth of it, I mean, it's...
A lot of them are getting it, but
it's a big one.
A long time.
Yeah.
And this is in full-time training. It must be very hard to do if people are doing like a Wednesday night class or something,
It's hard for people, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing is, if you can't really find your feet, there's a lot of things are cut off. They'll never develop.
Yeah, sure. Because you can kind of gin away with it, can't you? You can... away from it and get the inside very mobile and stuff like that and get your power from there, but
it's not comparable though to somebody that's doing that and has their feet.
Yeah,
it's not comparable in my opinion.
Yeah, it's like when you see a lot of the I don't want to talk bad about what people are doing, but you see a lot of people are doing Fajin stuff and you can see they haven't done a lot of martial arts alongside it or beforehand or something, and you can kind
they've
of
done it how to move
of, yeah and it yeah yeah that's one thing, and even then they just look kind of like like they're all balanced together. Right. You know what I mean? Like the body's kind of balanced together and it looks like, okay, they're ginning, but...
If they take a step, they might fall over.
Totally, yeah. If they don't know how to move. Wind, they'd be screwed.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
It's an issue. Uh-huh. And I think especially prevalent in Tai Chi because Tai Chi tends to attract a lot of people that aren't naturally that way inclined.
Nerds, yeah. Tai Chi attracts nerds.
I was going to politely say introverts, but yeah, dorks.
Well,
yeah,
I'm introverted.
Yeah, it attracts people that aren't really into that. I mean, it makes sense as well.
Well, less athletic.
Tai Chi. Yeah, because that wasn't, you know, that's not what your interest is. I don't know if that's what drew me to it. I don't think it was. I think it was because I saw somebody doing it and doing it very well, and I was like, that's cool.
I know what drew me to it.
Huang Shi Shen, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah.
I want that.
Mine was Dr. Shen.
Right. You see something that's like, damn, I want that.
I'd already done Tai Chi before, but I was sort of like, wasn't really into it, you know, but then I hadn't seen the results that
I did it because my Kung Fu teacher made me do it.
Uh-huh.
And then I found Wong, and then, okay. Yeah.
Which is, and he was definitely a master of rebounding, plus.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and he is naturally athletic, and a cultivator, and a fighter. He has all those things, right?
He was big.
And he is big, and much bigger than
you see compared
people.
To his students. It looks like
he's tall, solid, big hands. Yeah. He was a big guy.
Yeah. Even when he was old.
Yeah, he's big.
Barrel on legs. Yeah. There's a let's bring up a bone of contention.
And it's, never.
It's not a bone of contention. Well, is it? Maybe. I think it could become one. Is that obviously people discuss principles within Tai Chi, and there's a couple of really interesting ones for me. And one of them is use of the spine,
right?
Which we've chatted about a little bit, mm-hmm. But not a huge amount. But obviously, there are these lines within using the spine in Tai Chi.
Like the qi adheres to the spine.
Qi adheres to the spine, or power comes from the spine, or jing comes from the spine. These are phrases I can think of. So obviously, that would lead someone to come to the conclusion that it's probably wise to bend the spine, curve the spine, and release the spine.
Like use the spine as a bow and that kind of stuff.
That kind of stuff, yes. So I already know your thoughts on it, but what's your thoughts on that?
No. I think it's wrong. I think it's external modality. That's how you do make power in a lot of external arts.
Yes.
Not the silly wave thing, but like the flexation of the spine.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That silly, like, no.
No. Sistema uses that a bit. Sistema.
I don't know anything about that.
And then they hit you with a shovel.
I'm pretty sure shovels hurt.
Yes. That's usually what happens.
So, yes, the qi adheres to the spine. The power comes from the spine. Yeah, I don't really like that.
I would say it's more accurate that the power mobilizes as a byproduct of the spine initiating it.
Yes.
Which is not quite the same, right?
That's true. And why does that happen? Because of the adherence to the spine.
Yeah.
So what does it mean, in my opinion? Something like... So, I mean, this is...
This is post-rebounding.
This is very far post-rebounding. This is even a lot past the Neijin level. It's quite a sort of high level of that.
Yeah.
Like, hardly anyone is doing it, in my opinion. You need to be extremely full, that's why.
Yeah.
So you need to have been cultivating qi for a long time. And as far as I can tell, there's no way to speed up the process unnaturally. Like, you can do it fast or slow, but it takes a damn long time either way.
And the thing I want to pull you up on there as well, or underline, is what you said is you need to have been cultivating qi for a long time.
Yeah.
Not just cultivating tai chi for a long
time. No, the substance. Yes. The substance. Building
that's
the substance.
Huge, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's so rare, this skill, let's say, that qi adheres to the spine, but let's just start with, most people don't even believe in qi in the first place.
It's a bit of a hurdle.
So it's a bit of a problem. And then even many that do don't think it's a substance. They believe in some weird metaphor thing.
Yeah, sure.
So we're starting from, okay, you understand qi is an actual thing, and it can be increased.
Yep.
Yeah. So you need to increase it for a long time and achieve a lot of fullness.
Yes.
So the whole body has to be full to a certain density until it starts getting denser around the spine.
Right. And then, do you aim for that, or just the byproduct of the fullness eventually gets it to go to the spine?
Byproduct.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You don't aim it. You can't imagine it to go there, or will it? No. No.
Yeah, I don't know.
No. Yeah. In my opinion, it's just something to do with our anatomy that it happens like that.
Yeah, sure.
The way the qi naturally is produced in the body at a cellular level and all that, it thickens up around there.
There's a lot
and
of
in the whole body.
Too.
Nerves are definitely part of it.
Yeah.
So, after a long time of proper cultivation, past what we would call, I mean, there's many levels of fullness, but initial fullness, past balloon man is sure. the description I would use. And then it gets denser around the spine so that when you move internally,
yes,
when you move the dantian or you move internally and you mobilize the qi, the spine moves as a result of that movement. It churns a little bit. It flexes left, it flexes right, it spirals a little bit, it twists a little bit. And when that happens, it's like if this was my body and the water was a qi and I put something in and churn around, it's an invisible movement of the spine, not the silly stuff. It's invisible. Yeah. That little movement moves the qi around inside the body in a very powerful way, which creates fullness and emptiness and yin and yang qi differentials in the body and creates internal jin.
Yes.
So the stickiness of the qi to the spine creates a certain yin-yang balance of mobilization of qi, which creates balanced zhong ding jin, tai chi jin.
It's a highly profound principle at that level.
It's, like I said, I mean, the people that can do it, there's hardly any.
And the level of freeness that the spine requires from the ribs is huge.
You need a huge amount of openness and freeness, but if you have that, but you don't have the feeling of qi, it doesn't work. You just are a yogi.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Nothing happens.
Yes.
So you need the openness, the freeness, the mobility, the fullness. There's so many components of correct cultivation over many, many years for that to happen.
There's a comparable principle in Bagua,
right,
which I think out of the arts, Tai Chi, Ching, and Bagua, Tai Chi and Bagua have the most comparison.
Small frame Tai Chi definitely is so similar to Bagua. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Xing Yi is like the sick cousin, you know? It's the sick cousin of the arts, the one you allow to the party.
The angry percussive cousin.
He causes a scene every time. Yeah.
Bless him.
But Bagua has this idea as well that it's the same, that people often try to torque or twist the spine, which I...
The external version of what should be happening.
Yes, and in my opinion, Bagua does not twist the spine, right, which is always one of the biggest disagreements I have with people, that the spine, actually when you sink the qi and then turn the body a little bit, what it does is it sort of pushes the compression of the qi into the chambers.
Yeah.
And then your spine curls around your center line. So it's more like the center line twists, and the spine, obviously it's not that mobile, but wants to make that movement around it, which is Bagua's way of training it, right?
Right. Yeah, well, they're developing something very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar.
And the result of that is something called dragon body.
Yeah,
they call it. Do you have the same? I don't know.
Well, I don't call it dragon body, but I say you can see the dragon.
Right, okay.
So yeah, it's the same thing. It's the dragon is to me is like the spiral of the incense smoke, the qi movement like that. It's like the double helix or the DNA spirals, intersecting spirals, and you perceive that very directly internally.
Yeah,
it's a real thing.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas the dragon body, what I was taught when I was younger, when I first started Bagua, when I had people who didn't really know what they were doing, to be honest, it was dragon body comes when you can turn your body in different segments as far, like a lot of flexibility in your spine.
Which means you're not full.
Totally. And actually, because
You can't turn like that if you're full. It's
no,
impossible.
And I was very young, so I had that flexibility. Sure. I remember all the teachers younger, well, you've got dragon
body. You're amazing. You're like a five-year-old girl.
I've only been here a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, yeah. And then as you start to fill up, you can't twist.
Well, I always say, you don't twist, and then later you can't twist.
You don't? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because when you twist, you empty out,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like if you had a ball full of air and you twisted it.
Yes.
If you managed to twist it, all the air would come out.
Yeah, sure.
If it was really full, you can't twist it.
Yeah.
But the attempt to twist makes things move.
Yeah, sure. And that mobilization of the spine inside, moving like that, all of a sudden makes a lot of sense of how you can generate the power from release, which is the other thing that is...
Well, that's what makes it go.
Totally. A bit of a misunderstanding, because I've seen people try to do it and then just sort of let go of their power on the end or something. You know what I mean?
If you've organized your body well over time and all the connections are built and they're long and sort of, you know, let's say stretched, not that you're stretching, conductive, when you release, it happens.
Sure.
It happens.
Yes.
Different to you trying to twist, totally radically different to you trying to twist, right?
Yeah,
the opposite.
Yeah.
And so all you do is release and power comes out, multiple jins come out. You only release and jin comes out. But if you haven't done the kung fu over many years, you release and nothing happens. Yeah. So then you release and then you're yin and then you suddenly shunt.
And then you hit with a shovel. That's normally what comes next. Spine. That's how you get power.
That's it.
So then the other topic I want to bring up, no less contentious. I mean, I don't know. Is the spine movement contentious? Probably.
I'd just call it misunderstood.
Misunderstood. Yeah. Yeah, and if it's one of those things that if I bring up and I talk about, that you can see people are very defensive, like hackles come up straight away on it.
I think it's cool if I hear something that's different to what I'm...
Yeah, yeah, I want to understand what's going on. Yeah, yeah.
But and then I'll judge it on being superior or inferior and adjust accordingly.
But then the other one's lineage. So I do want to discuss this.
You weren't kidding then.
Now, you can't deny that lineage is contentious.
Yes.
As a topic.
It's a stupid topic, but yes, it is.
It's a ridiculous... Oh, it's stupid. Should we not go there?
No, no, right, no. Okay. That's why it's worth discussing the stupidity of it all.
Yeah, I mean, lineage is something... I mean, we should define lineage.
What, there's the real version or the fake version?
Go for it. There's two different versions of lineage, right?
Yeah.
What's the real one?
Real lineage is when somebody has an achievement and they're transmitting that achievement to you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
One generation.
Yes. Right. So basically a lineage can be lost in one generation.
And almost always is. And then if that next person is achieved, then that's the continuation. But it's not really a continuation because people that are really gifted enough to really get it, it's always going to have a flavor difference and things change.
Yep.
But the lineage is only as good as your teacher, right?
Yes.
It's a, forget about lineage, forget about everything. It's transmission, right?
Yeah.
And if they don't have it, they can't transmit it. It doesn't matter how many fancy words you use, how many certificates you have.
32nd generation.
It's 28th generation. Well, that long, it's got to be lost.
Right? So, yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's not that. So what people say when they mean lineage is just nerdy stuff, really.
Certification plus history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Which has nothing to do with skill at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zero. So yes. True lineage to me is the transmission from somebody that has the achievement to somebody else that gets the achievement.
Yeah, sure.
That's a lineage.
That's a major leap in order for that to happen.
Well, it's so rare.
Yeah, and my view as well is different from some other teachers. And actually by having this view, I'm not saying it's right, but my view is that if you're going to pass on a lineage, say...
But you mean someone else's lineage?
Well, no, say you're a teacher and you're going to pass on a lineage. But if you're going to pass on lineage, so, I don't know, whatever, you could say 25th generation Yang style, say, or 15th generation Wu style. I don't know what number we're on. I've got no idea. But say you're going to do that and you're going to pass on the lineage. I think that if you're going to pass that mantle on, it should only really be passed on if the person already has the skill.
Well, by definition, it's not passed on if they don't have the skill.
Completely, right.
That is the definition of lineage, at least the one we're using now, the true definition.
So that's where the other form of lineage comes in, which is it's a title, right?
Yeah, a title, yeah.
Yes, which is normally passed on...
Well, it's the marketing version of lineage and all
political.
That.
Political. It's as political as tolku is.
Tolku is the Vajrayana equivalent of Tai Chi's lineage.
Yes.
A purely political machine.
And we all know there's only one true tolku, which is Stephen Segal, right?
The greatest.
All the others are just politics.
He has endless cities, including... reggae and blues.
Yeah, he was doing the musical version of Blackface for his last album. It was incredible. Yeah, so you got this lineage, and this happens the same in Qigong as well, and in alchemy and things, and definitely is the case. And it puts me in a funny position because I actually have several of those lineages, as I believe you do as well. And I have to, I could sort of sort them. I could kind of, if I took the lineages I had, even though I've been through, bow, touch your head, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, I could actually sort them into, this one is actually real. And I'll tell you why, because that teacher had skill, and I feel that to a certain degree I've managed to receive that skill from them. And then this one, no, I didn't learn shit from that teacher, and I'm not even convinced that teacher had anything themselves anyway.
Right, but the outcome of all that is you and your skill.
Completely, yeah, yes.
It's you, meaning it's unique, it's your skill. It's not... Yeah. Some exactly how they did it.
No.
Cookie cutter.
And if you've learned off more than one person, you can't anyway.
Some people...
It's not even possible.
Well, some maybe you could learn but not get anything of value and then get all your good stuff from one person. That's lots of people.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm sure there's plenty of people that learned Qigong in many schools and then come along to you and they learn and get all their skills through you until they're skilled.
I can still see that incorrect shoulder alignment.
The incorrect part they got. So I do think it happens, but it's certainly not the case with you or for me.
Mm-hmm.
But for certain people, that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
More and more, as more good teachers are more public, I think it will happen more, that people get all their skill from one person.
Yeah, but
for us, and certainly in those years for us, the different time, years. Right?
Yeah.
You took pieces and searched, and like it just wasn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And it's you get the other problem. There's so many people that the lineage is what's most important to them. So, for example, I've known people that are, you know, Dragon Gate or Jungi or whatever. Okay, they have their Taoist lineage, and then they come, and then they come and train, and they've got nothing. Mm-hmm. They've got nothing.
Oh, they've got the certificate and the hat.
But they've got the hat, but they've got nothing else.
Yeah, and that's most.
And then what happens is, I try to teach them, and I work with them for a couple of years, something like that, and mm-hmm. then they develop skill, and then they go away, and then they never mention yeah. Lotus Ten Gong. They never mention me, and they
their Dragon Gate lineage and all this came from Wudang or whatever. Yes. Yeah.
I have one very exact person who came to me for a number of years after coming from Wudang and learning mm-hmm. nothing, learned how to make things work on the inside, went back to Wudang, and now claims it comes from Wudang lineage.
I've had exactly the same thing happen, not from Wudang, but it's the same, just replace the names, exactly the same thing. Yes. They got everything that they have from me, from our yep. training, and then they just said it come from other things and make up their little workshop tour now based on these other
yep.
arts, which they didn't train.
Yes.
Or maybe they did a bit of and got nothing out of it. Actually, there's quite a few.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's called lack of integrity.
It is called lack of integrity. And it shows me as well how important, how much more important the title of the lineage is than anything else.
Well, to them.
Yeah, to them. Yeah, yeah. Completely. Because they would rather say it came from some far-flung mountain yeah. in China yeah. than it did some white dickhead yeah. from England.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's it. Well, it comes back to what we were talking about in the beginning. Like, they want a result. They don't want the cultivation. They don't mm-hmm. want the substance. It's like a wrong intention from the very beginning. I think all these flaws and side paths and wrong roads that people take are because of defiled intention from the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
Not that you can't change your intention, but like a root cause inside is not right.
My root cause wasn't right when I started.
But it changes, right?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I wanted to be able to beat people up and impress people.
Sure, sure.
That was it. That was the cause. Or that was the root cause of all of my searching in the early stages, mm. yeah. And originally I was born into a family that did it. But that was what interested me. But
mine was just to straighten myself out. So it was,
yeah, okay.
It was cultivation, but not deep.
Mm-hmm.
Just I needed discipline. I needed to get straight. It was that.
So how do people not change their motive?
I guess they don't.
Because once you've achieved it,
their initial goal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It must change. And excuse me, lose my voice a little bit. If your initial goal is, you know, I don't know, to feel more confident. Surely at some stage, within a few years, you must feel more confident.
But a lot of them, I think these days, because yeah. the scene has changed, their goal is to run workshops or their goal is to have an online school. Yeah. So their goal is valuable
mm-hmm.
commercially.
Yep.
And maybe in terms of receiving praise or whatever, that kind of stuff, yeah, making yeah. them feel inflated.
Yes.
So, yeah, they achieve the goal, but then they keep reaping from the achievement
yeah,
over okay. time, so it doesn't immediately get boring. When your goal's more internally based, as soon as you achieve it, you want to move on to the next thing.
Mm.
But because yeah, it's true. External, they keep reaping it. It's like a cash cow that never stops paying.